Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome you back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. PPV.com is the leader in pay-per-view events, whether it's AEW wrestling or it's boxing. We have a lot of fights coming February 1st. Benavidez versus Morel, March 1st. Tank Davis versus Lamont Roach. I'll be heading out to Barclays Center this upcoming week for a press conference with Tank and Roach to get their thoughts, get some interviews, talk to Tank, all that fun stuff. So go to PPV.com, no subscriptions. You can stream it right to your phone, tablet, big screen TV, all that fun stuff. Chris, I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Looks like you're coming to us from an undisclosed location, as Chris Algieri always is. Sunglasses on for those that are watching on YouTube. How are you, my friend?
Good, good. I'm actually, I'm right down the block from the Huntington Paramount, where I cut my teeth. To work my way towards a world title. So home for the weekend, for the holidays.
So we're like 30 miles apart right now, because I'm at my parents' house on the east end of Long Island.
We're usually a 1,030 miles apart, but now we're 30.
How does it feel to be back on Long Island? You get any bagels, pizza?
Just ate at Mondays, the classic diner in Huntington Village. It's still a mess in there. Still lines out the door every day. Doesn't matter what time you go. But it was good, man. Ate some eggs, some hash,
Coffee. Terrible coffee?
Terrible coffee. Oh, man.
Diner coffee?
Dude. Diner coffee.
The thing about diner coffee, it might suck, but they'll refill that cup 35 times.
It's endless. It's endless. It never gets cold. It's an endless bottomless cup. So, yes, there are benefits to diner coffee. Man, it is not good when you're used to drinking good coffee.
Yeah, you're a coffee snob, posting your coffee on Instagram every morning. Thanksgiving is now over. We head into December. It is December 1st as we record this. Some big fights this month. We're going to see Naoya Inoue this month. We're going to see Navarrete. We're going to see Valdez. We're going to see Robesti Ramirez. We're going to see Rafael Espinoza. We're going to see Tyson Fury. We're going to see Alexander Usyk. We're going to see a lot of fighters this month. They're going to end the year with a bang. We will have our year-end award show at the end of this month. What a month. What a year. What a life it has been. This past weekend, you know, it wasn't a huge fight. It's been about 2 weeks of kind of like nothing on the schedule. Yeah. Last week, there was absolutely nothing. This week, we had the Sonny Edwards Yafai match, which ended up, you know, getting national headlines because of how Sonny Edwards basically just not even quietly quit, just said the words out loud in the corner. So we'll start there before we get into some failed negotiation talk on this episode. But Sonny Edwards loses a TKO to, I should rephrase that because that's not how it should be. Galal Yafai defeats Sonny Edwards, sixth round TKO. He looks sensational. But the biggest takeaway from this fight is Sonny Edwards saying in the second round to his corner, "I don't want to be here." Literally, quote unquote, "I don't want to be here." Gets just bullied in there. Did not look like the Sonny Edwards that was just bewildering folks for years. Didn't even look like the Sonny Edwards that we saw against Bam, who put up a valiant effort. So what the heck was that about, Chris? How shocked were you when you saw Sonny Edwards utter those words in that performance?
Well, I mean, I wasn't shocked from how he was performing. You know, to hear that after, because you watch him, like, this is not Sonny Edwards. He wasn't himself. Listen, Sonny's good. He can fight. He can box. He's tricky. He's slick. He's got a good jab. He's got big cojones. You know, he can really fight, and he just was not there that night. And that was obvious. When he said that in the second round, I think he said, mate, to be perfectly honest, I don't want to be here right now, mate. And I was like, wow.
You see his face? Like, it was written all over his face.
But that's the thing. Like, Yafai should have got him out of there much quicker than he did. He's just, you know, I didn't think Yafai was going to win the fight. I thought Sonny was going to use his experience and his slickness. But Yafai, he just went out there and just beat him up. He bullied him. He pushed him around. You know, he's not a huge puncher. So, you know, Sonny was never in danger in the fight. But he just did not want to be there and was just looking for a way out any way possible.
Yeah, I will give Edwards credit because even after he said, "I don't want to be here," he still put up like three or four rounds where he was throwing bombs. Yeah. He's throwing bombs in there, but Yafai, I mean,
he almost boxed his way back into the fight. Like after saying that, like he was really off, and then he just kind of came back, and he's like, "I'm like, yeah, this guy might actually get back into the fight," but he didn't want to be there.
Yeah. So shout out to Gafal Yafai, who just put on an unbelievable performance. Coming out party for him, even if it was a shell of Sonny Edwards' former self. You have to give the man credit, and obviously, you do that. You say good job from him, and will he stay at 112? Will he go to 115? They're already talking about potentially a fight with him and Bam. I think that's years away. Because Yafai is 8-0, but he has that crazy amateur pedigree. So we'll see what's next for him. It's always great to see a fighter emerge like that. But back to Sonny Edwards, and him saying that, like, it's not just it made the rounds obviously on all the social media on the boxing sites, but I was seeing it on like mainstream sport accounts, like boxer Sonny Edwards' startling admission in the middle of a fight. Now, this is something I haven't seen in years. I don't know if I've ever seen it before. Chris, you're the fighter on this podcast. What goes through a fighter's mind fight week? Because from what I've heard, and some Rob Tebbit tweeted out that Sonny told him himself, like, win, lose, or draw, I'm retiring. And he ended up retiring after the fight. You could tell that his heart wasn't in it. But as a fighter, you know, how hard is it to step into that ring when you're, I wouldn't even say 1 foot out the door. He had 9 toes out the door.
I never liked that I'm going to retire, win, lose, or draw, you know, statement. It's not a good sign for your mental health, to where you're going into the fight, your mental preparation. But listen, I've been in fights and being like, I don't want to be here. It actually happened to me in one of my late fights, Mikel Lapierre at the Garden. It was the second round, just same thing. It was the second round. And I was like, I had like an existential crisis. I'm like, what am I doing here? Why am I here? Why am I fighting? What am I doing right now? I was like, you know, I'm 37 years old. I got money in the bank. I got a beautiful, like, what am I doing? I had that moment in that fight and literally just had to snap out of it. I remember I'm in the corner and my coaches were saying, so I didn't hear a word they said. All I was thinking was in my head was like, what the hell am I doing here? And then listen, I got myself back into the fight and I put on a dominant performance and I threw like 1,000 punches or whatever, but yeah, no, it happens, man. I probably should have hung it up right there. Honestly, at the end of that, I should be like, all right, this is probably the end of my road, but, it happens, man. And you have these kind of come to Jesus moments, for lack of a better term, in the ring. And you have many of them throughout your career. And you know, in the beginning you have them and you're like, man, I'm good at this. And then at the end you have them, you're like, I'm not good at this anymore. So it happens, man. It happens more often than you would think.
What would you say? Really,
you don't hear guys verbalize it though, like the way Sonny did.
That's an unbelievable little story from you there. I'll get more on that in a second. But like, what goes first? Like, is it the legs? Is it the body? Is it the mental? What creeps into your mind first when you start to have those feelings? Because they didn't happen for you. I'm sure it didn't happen just right in that ring. I'm sure those thoughts crept in during training camp, or they crept in maybe after your last win and you're sitting there trying to get over all the pains and all the aches and stuff. What comes first? Because with Sonny, it seemed like it was mental before physical. What came first for you, or what comes first for a fighter when they realize, you know what, like, I don't want to be here?
It was definitely my body and my abilities. I just wasn't the same fighter in the gym, and I knew that. But I was very aware and cognizant of the fact that, you know, 37-year-old Chris was not the same as 27-year-old Chris, and which is fine. You know, you knew that. I was a different fighter, and I knew that. But to think of yourself as good as you were, or think you're getting better, but not being able to perform it just wears in the back of your head. And I think over time, those physical degradations add up, and then they creep into your mind. And once your mind goes, you're gone.
So. Yeah. I mean, that's what it felt like with Sonny, because he's 28 years old. Like,
yeah. It's prime. It's physical prime.
I know it's different for the smaller fighters. I feel like they age differently. They kind of age faster. I have no physical evidence for that. Just a general opinion, a vibe. I feel like they... You know, he's been going at it for a while. I mean, he's been at the top level for a while now. But I think it was a little shocking to hear he's 28 years old and doesn't have that desire anymore. And a lot of people are pointing to the BAM loss. And I wanted to get a discussion going on taking your first loss and what that does to you as a fighter. Where we've seen some fighters in recent times, especially in the post-Mayweather era, where a loss seems so devastating, just kind of disappear for a really long time. Don't come back and fight right away. Take it pretty hard. You never maybe not see them again. You know, don't come back the same. Sonny Edwards, you can make that case after the Bam fight. He did come back and beat Curiel pretty. He looked pretty good in that fight. So it wasn't like right away. But a lot of people are pointing to that Bam loss and him not being the same after not having the same desire, not having the same will. I don't know about that. What do you think about fighters taking a loss for the first time and it kind of like affecting the rest of their careers, or at least for the short term?
I think it's how you lose. And I think with Sonny, especially in that Bam fight, I do think the Bam fight had a lot to do with it. Bam outboxed him. Like, Bam beat him at everything he's good at. So that's I think that's part of it. Like, my first loss was Pacquiao. You know, it was a huge step up. You know, it was Manny Pacquiao. And I got hurt early, and I was coming off a very damaging fight against Ruslan, so my eye was not healed yet. So after that, like, listen, I took that loss very badly, but also I was like, listen, I'm better than that. And I came right back with Amir Khan. Like, I'm getting jumped right back into the mix. It depends how you lost. Yes, I lost badly to Pacquiao, but it was Pacquiao. And also, I knew why I didn't perform the way that I could have. With Sonny, I think he was 100% prepared for Bam, and Bam outdid him. He out-sunnied him. He outboxed him. He out-jabbed him. He walked him down, and he got him out of there. Like, so how you lose definitely affects. And someone like Sonny, who is a consummate boxer, he's like, this is what I've got. I don't have anything else. And this guy beat me? Like, what do I do? How do I be the best guy in the world now? That can be a really stunning, what's the word I'm looking for?
Revelation.
Revelation, realization. Yeah, that listen, I'm not the best in the world at something. And I've been telling myself I am for 20 years. It's tough.
We'll see if he comes back. 28 is really young. He can come back in really 2 years and still be, you know, assess the landscape and all that money too. Another thing too is, like, I don't think he was making top dollar, but he probably made pretty good amount for the Bam money. You know, I don't know what's left for him. He probably have to work his way back. And if your heart's not in it, I mean, taking some of these comeback fights are pretty tough when you're at the top of your game. A lot of these fighters, maybe not in Edwards' case, but a lot of these other fighters that suffer a loss, you know, the amount of money fighters are getting paid now, like, they can live off of, if you manage your money correctly, you can live off of this money, and you can get into something else. It's just a brutal sport. And it was shocking to see him say that. You know, a lot of times you can, with you in the LePierre fight, like, no one knew. I was there. I was in the arena. I had no freaking clue that was going through your mind. I was like, oh, wow, Algieri's pumping that jab. He's throwing 100 punches around. Like, I would never think that. No. Yeah. And a lot of times you don't know that. I mean, you see a fighter, what they're going through inside of their head. For him to say it out loud and be so forthcoming, I don't see anyone really knocking him. Even though he's a very brash fighter, he's a very braggadocious fighter. Even before minutes before the fight, he did a video for Matchroom and he was talking all sorts of trash. That's what Sonny Edwards, that's how he came on the scene for me. It was like, who was this tiny little guy who was talking all this shit? But to see him have that moment, opened up the curtain or drew back the curtain a little bit to what fighters go through. I think he should be somewhat applauded for it. I don't know how you believe as a fighter. It was just refreshing, I should say. I don't know if you need to be applauded or not. It was refreshing to see someone be so truthful and so raw, because a lot of the best moments in boxing come in that corner.
Yeah, raw is the right word, and that's what a fight is, man. It's the most brutally raw, exposed you ever are in your life. You're naked in front of millions of people, you know, essentially, and you're fighting your heart out, you know, literally your heart is open, you know, for the world to see what you got and what you don't got. And I don't knock Sonny at all. I mean, listen, that happens, man. It happened to him. It's terrible when it happens in a fight, because listen, that happens in the gym too, where guys are like, you know what, I don't want to be here, I don't want to do this, I'm done, you know. And I think that happens way more. But that's not on the world stage the way that Sonny exposed himself. But yeah, I don't knock him. It struck him at that point. Time to hang it up. It is what it is. I mean,
do you think his corner should have got him out of there? Like, the corner gave him a immediate pep talk. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Like, gave him some tough love, which, I mean, old school, that's what you're supposed to do as a corner. You're supposed to be there, you know, to tell them what to do, or, you know, be their extra little will when you need it. Were you surprised that the corner said that, or you think they should have stopped it?
No, it always depends on the relationship that the corner has with the fighter, because they're not always the same, right? You've got, you know, there's a trainer fighter relationship where, yeah, that, you know, they have a relationship, but it's not like there's not a love there. And if you got a guy who really believes in you and trusts you and takes your word for it, if I said that to one of my cornermen, you know, my corner Keith, he would have pulled me out of the fight. He'd be like, all right, Chris, this is not what this young man is about. I've been with him too long to see him. I'll go out there and get hurt. But if it was a newer trainer, you know, if it maybe like no knock on John David Jackson, but if it was John, he probably would have just said, hey man, let's get going. Maybe not. John was a fighter too. He might have pulled me out too. It just depends. It depends on the relationship.
I think you got to give him a round, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know. He wasn't getting hurt in the fight, you know. So at no point was Sonny hurt. And like I said, he started to kind of box his way back into the fight. Like he might have just figured it out and just got back into that fight, and you know, and possibly won some rounds and got to the end. But you know, so I don't know. I, again, he wasn't getting hurt, so I don't think they did a poor job trying to get him over the finish line.
It reminds me of like if you're out with your boys and you're like, oh, I want to go home. I'm over this night, and they're like, no, come on,
no,
man,
no, no,
stay
come
out.
On, man.
Like we haven't even started yet. Like we're about to talk to some girls, about to go, you know, hit the bar, and
then
you're like,
that literally
right,
happened to me last night. My buddy Frank's like, ah, this is my last one. I'm done. And then we hit like three more places.
There you go. So it's similar to that. Like your trainer has to be your eyes and ears and kind of will you into something. It's just played out for everyone to see, and it was a very raw moment, which only boxing can provide. On to some failed negotiations, Chris. I love talking boxing with you every single week, twice a week, powered by PPV.com. I love breaking down big fights. I love previewing big fights. I love getting in the ring and talking about who's going to win and how they're going to win. I love talking about old classic fights. I love everything about boxing. The least favorite part about boxing for me, Chris, are negotiations.
Yeah.
Especially when they play out on Twitter. Especially when fans think that one side is right and one side is wrong, because it's never the case. It's a he said, she said. It's who has what promoter has the bigger platform to spew their propaganda to make the other side look bad. Fans never know. They just take sides on who their favorite fighter is and what they think went down, rather than the actual facts, which are just so muddied. And just the worst part of boxing is negotiations that play out on social media and for the public to see. That was the case over this last week with Jerome Boot Dennis and Virgil Ortiz, which is a fight that we thought was happening February 22nd, that it's no longer happening. And maybe we get this fight between Shakur Stevenson and Floyd Schofield, with Floyd Schofield's dad tweeting 400 million times on behalf of his son on Thanksgiving Day. Just insane. Put the phone down, my friend. So we'll start
there. Go eat some turkey. Put the phone
down. Put the phone down and let your kid tweet. It's just like dads and it's just all the worst ingredients. Dads and boxing managers, Eddie Hearn, Oscar De La Hoya, Shakur Stevenson. It was like a freaking no fights to watch. It was just 4 or 5 days of just negotiation to the point where I'm like, I just can't take it anymore. But we will talk about it and we will try to make sense of it. This 5-on-5 that's being proposition for February 22nd. Last week, Dan Rafael reports that it's going to be a massive card. Dubois and Parker, Better BF and Bivol, which I broke, no big deal. Ortiz and Fundura. We're going to see Shiraz and Adamas and Zhirhai Zhang versus Kayabel. And amped. Everyone's excited for about 24 hours. Then you had a few fans being like, come on, one of these fights is going to fall out. You know, even if you get four of those five, it's still an awesome card. Unfortunately, I think the best fight on the card fell out, and that's Ortiz versus Boot Dennis.
Yes.
And it comes definitely to light, like as of last week, it's all Dan Rafael reporting, so shout out to him, still doing a great job. Boot Dennis' side agrees to it, the fight with Virgil Ortiz. Virgil Ortiz' side agrees to it, Golden Boy, Eddie Hearn. Eddie Hearn's talking, doing interviews like it's just a formality that this fight is done. You assume it's going to be at 154. You assume it's going to be for Virgil Ortiz's interim title, which does mean something in the grand scheme of things. Boom. Oh, you know, let's get this going. Awesome fight. And then in the 11th hour, you find out that Boots doesn't want this fight. You find out that there was they tried to get it at 147 in a last ditch effort to kind of not take the fight. And it just comes out, and I hate to use this, it looks like Jerome Boots Ennis ducked Virgil Ortiz. By definition, this is a duck. There's no other way around it. It's just, there's no nuance when it comes to Twitter negotiations, Chris, and this long-winded rant that I'm on. There's no nuance. It's either
you're exposed. We talked about being exposed before. This is another way. Twitter, man, that never goes away, guys. Even when you delete those tweets, they are there. People have seen them. People have screenshotted them. They are there.
But it's just like, this was more than just Twitter. This was your own promoter in Eddie Hearn speaking on your behalf because you said, yeah, let's do this, or someone on your team said, yeah, let's do this, and Boots put out a statement saying, you know, if it only can come from me from here on out. I didn't know my team, which is his dad, was negotiating for me. So it's not like it was some Twitter thing. That's why this is so a bizarre case of failed negotiations, is it was coming from his own side. It was coming from his own promoter. Like, Eddie wasn't going to go out and make his fighter look bad by saying, yeah, we're taking this fight, we're doing this fight. Eddie goes on interviews 4 or 5 a day, and he was talking like this fight was done because Virgil was in 100%. Virgil Ortiz will fight literally anybody. Shout out to him. Yes. It was on Boots' side. It was on Boots' side that had the hesitation. It was on Boots' side that decided to put 147 pounds in there, last-ditch effort to kind of just cement that this fight was never going to happen. Because Virgil Ortiz is not fighting at 147. It's very documented. This guy had health problems. Nearly in the freaking hospital, almost died trying to make 147. So, I don't know. I hated this. I hated this when it all went down. I do think they fight eventually. I can't say I'm shocked. I can't say I'm surprised, but I am a little taken back by how it all went down on Boots' side, who is just getting lambasted. Great word.
Is that even a word?
Lambasted.
He's getting basted like a turkey.
He's getting basted like a turkey by boxing fans. Thoughts, Chris?
This was news to me. I'm glad that you went on that rant because I didn't know what was going on with all of this. Dan's texting me last night telling me that.
Oh, you're just out enjoying your life and having fun in Huntington while I'm in the trenches?
With my family, hanging out. We were watching Power Slap, laughing our asses off.
That sounds like fun.
It was very fun. But Dan is lamenting these broken negotiations and telling me about Jerron Ennis. I think Jerron Ennis is ducking, he tells me. I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, we got to talk about this tomorrow. And this poor guy is very, and here we are. And now we're here. So I'm kind of behind the
you're learning in real time. That's beautiful.
I'm learning in real time. I'm picking up. This is why people tune in, because you never know. But yeah, it doesn't look good, man. But also, in defense of Boots, because I hate calling people ducks. You never know what's going on behind the paywall with fighters, right? We were just talking about Sonny Edwards, and we never know what's going on what's going on in a mind of a fighter. Mm-hmm. But in defense of Boots for this one, this fight didn't make a whole lot of sense for him. You know, he just had a poor performance at 147. Was very confused. It seemed like what he was going to do next. Maybe it's time to move up to 54. And the same interview talks about getting the other belt to 47. He just did not really seem right in the head in terms of what he was going to do next. And to jump right into a fight like this, which is a mega fight. Like you said, that's the best fight on that card. It's one of the best fights that we made in boxing today against Virgil Ortiz, who is an absolute monster. Especially a first time at 54, you're going right into Virgil Ortiz, which sounded great. Sounded great to us. We were like, wow, this guy's a badass.
Right.
But from a business perspective, doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And that's 3 months, too. Now fans don't want to hear that. It's 3 months since his last fight.
And that was a tough fight with Trigadzian. That was a rough night.
Who's taking fights on 3 months? No one. We're getting fights on 6, 7, 8 months rest. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Boots didn't do himself any favors with his last performance. He didn't do himself any favors with that clumsy post-fight interview, which fans will just use against him. They'll just hold every word he says in a post-fight interview where you're, like you said, Chris, we should probably get rid of post-fight interviews because he wasn't concussed, but, you know, you're getting hit in the head. And
he might have been. We don't know.
You're absolutely right there. A post-fight interview where he says, I'm going to move with the 154. I'm done at 147. I can't make this weight anymore. And then you have this fight being just handed to you on a platter with money that you've never seen before. You're a fighter that has just famously been ducked yourself. You're a fighter that just can't get that big fight at 27. And now here it is presented to you on a golden Saudi Arabian turkey platter. And you turn it down. And the way you turn it down by putting the 147 in there was like the cherry on top. You know, this weird back and forth with your dad, like, are you guys on the same page? Like, did you tell your dad, no, I don't want this fight? Are you finally stepping up and taking control of your career, not letting your dad maybe make some of these decisions? Maybe that's why you weren't able to get some big fights. It was just a big time. It was all wound up into a big ball for Boots. And right now he is just getting the brunt of it, and he's going to hear about the brunt of it. He's going to get the brunt of it for a while now. Because Ortiz is looking like, he's coming out of this looking real good. And Boots is not. So Boots says he wants to stay at 147. and he wants to unify. So what does that mean? Like, does that mean Stanionis? Does that mean Barrios? We had this conversation a million times. Does that mean Barrios, who now Connor Benn is circling? Is this Brian Norman, who those talks broke down and he has a hand injury? So I don't know where Boots goes from here. It's an unbelievable talent. But man, has over the last like 16 months, where we thought signing with Matchroom was going to clear things out and give him a clear path towards superstardom, not the case. Like, he is once again making weird decisions. So I guess you got to just place this on Boots.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, we're seeing that more and more with fighters recently, is they're making the decisions on who and how they fight. You know, we got famously Crawford calling up Spence to be like, hey, man, let's make this fight. And, you know, Virgil wants all the smoke. He wants to fight literally everybody. So it just, in comparison, it looks really bad for Boots. And I think he's going to get raked over the coals. He's going to get basted like a turkey, like you said, for some time. And listen, it's just, again, I know where he's coming from in terms of trying to jump right into that fight. But this is why, you know, he's a quiet guy anyway. But you gotta be careful what you say in post-fight interviews. You gotta be careful what you do on Twitter. You gotta be careful who you let, you know, speak on your behalf. You know, it's obviously his father, who's also his manager and his trainer. But you've got to be really careful. You got to rein all that in, because if you let the cat out of the bag too soon, or this kind of thing happens, it makes you look really, really bad.
Yeah, and what a fall from grace. This guy was the boogeyman a couple of years ago, talking about the heir to the 147 throne. You know, finally signs with Matchroom.
Potentially the face of boxing at some point.
Right. You know, signs with Matchroom. And now he's just fighting Karen twice. He's now turning down huge fights. And I hope we see it. I hope we see it. Like, one silver lining of this, you know, maybe we see this fight in the summer. Maybe we see this fight in the U.S. There was one knock. I think fans were really excited to see that fight on the card. But from what I saw, fan reaction was, man, I love this fight, but I wish it was in Philly. Or I wish it was in Dallas, Texas. I wish it was in – this is a fight that belongs in the U.S. These are two of the very best young American stars. So maybe it happens in the U.S. I won't hold my breath, because it's just like fewer and fewer fights are happening in the U.S. But there is one silver lining of it, that maybe we get it later on this 2025, and it's its own main event. It's not, you know, the third fight of the night, which is insane for this card. One of the names that they're trying to plug in now at 154, which is one of the more exciting divisions in boxing, could we potentially see Virgil Ortiz versus Sebastian Fundora? Fundora with the two belts, who has been linked to Errol Spence. That fight, from what I hear, is happening, but Spence is not ranked by the WBO for it to be a title fight. That's a big-time problem. WBO is really, saying, no, Spence, you've never fought at 154. You've never fought with us, and I'm sorry, we can't rank you, put you in our rankings for this to be a title fight. Maybe that can...
Look at the WBO doing the right thing for once. That's amazing.
Yeah, I know. But will it last? Like, how much can they be... I'm not going to say be paid, but... How much will this last in terms of Spence not being ranked by the WBO? But anyway, Ortiz and Fundora would be awesome. Like, Ortiz versus any of the guys at 154 that are available would be awesome. I would love to see Sebastian Fundora jump in there.
Yeah, I mean, especially because he's the holder of two of those belts. So, listen, Virgil Ortiz, you talked about Boots being the boogeyman and being an avoided guy. Virgil Ortiz is the boogeyman, dude. It's been really hard to make fights for him. The Bohochek fight was a classic, and that's another guy that, especially after that performance, who's going to want to fight him? Another really tough guy, Madrimov, exactly. So you're making, you got these guys who are super avoided. So in terms of where that puts Virgil, I think he deserves right in that mix. Get that guy a title at 154. Get him in there with Fundora. I think he deserves it from his past performances, from that big win over Bohochek, from the fact that he's trying to make all these fights happen, he just can't. His promoter and manager, Rick Meridian, was tagging me in posts about Boots stuck to him. And he goes hard for his guys, man. I appreciate a nutty manager who really goes for their fighter. So I tip my hat to Rick. Rick, you're doing a good job. Keep it up. I love that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I think, listen, Virgil wants all the smoke, so he should get all the opportunities.
Yeah. He is the boogeyman in a sense, even though I thought he looked pretty vulnerable in the Bohochek fight. Like, he's still really good. And I thought he won that fight against Bochuk. A lot of people don't, but like he's very good at 154. And out of this whole thing, he's coming out looking great. I mean, this he put out a tweet. I haven't turned down a single person in my career. This is more evidence.
And I believe it too.
I believe it too. So maybe we get Fundora in there. I don't think it's going to be Fundora. There are a lot of other names at 154 that can be plugged into this fight, especially with the Saudi money and them throwing unbelievable paydays at these guys to jump in. But we're getting close. It's December 1st. I mean, it's February 22nd we're talking about. I mean, it's 2 months. You got to get in camp and you got to get the contracts and all that stuff. So that's the latest with the Boots and Ortiz fight. Over to Shakur was supposed to be on this card. Shakur was supposed to fight. Who was he originally supposed to fight? I can't even keep track of all this. He was not
Zepeda, and then
Zepeda. Yeah, Shakur was originally supposed to fight Zepeda. Zepeda gets the hand injury. We already talked about that last week. A little fishy, but he's out. So is it going to be Joe Cordina stepping back in to fight Shakur? Who knows? Shakur is on Twitter, just calling out anyone under the sun who wants to fight me on February 22nd. Send a contract. Let's go. Let's go. In steps Floyd Schofield and his dad on Twitter saying, we will fight you, Shakur. Shakur says, okay, put your money where your mouth is. I'm ready to sign the contract. Schofield says, I'm ready to sign the contract. Not so fast, says Oscar De La Hoya. I'm not putting my prospect in with an all-world fighter in Shakur Stevenson, which kind of goes against what Oscar has been saying nonstop on these clapbacks. I know, Chris, you love the clapbacks. I am not a fan of the clapbacks.
I love them. I think Oscar is the gift that keeps on giving. They're so nuts.
So cringy, though.
So cringe. But he's embraced the cringe. Now, listen, there's pictures of him out there in fishnets. You can't avoid being cringy. The guy has just embraced it. The guy wins, man. He figured it out.
These clapbacks started off funny, like, and now they have morphed into like fully edited pieces. He's talking in some weird, like, he's talking weird in them. Like, he has this weird voice. He's reading. It looks like he's reading off a teleprompter, and like boxing scene. All these places are like reporting off of things he said. He's saying things he shouldn't say. They're getting taken down. He is making news out of them. I give him credit because he's probably laughing, having a great time doing them, and just laughing so hard. And it's like giving him something to do. Every Thursday he can put out these clapbacks. But in one of these clapbacks, I don't watch them. Like, people send them to me, or I will read like a story written on boxing scene.
No, I'm 11:59 p.m. on Wednesday night. Like, when's the next clapback? Oh my god!
It's like when the Sopranos episode used to drop. Yeah. Oh yep. God, Oscar! But one of his recent ones, it makes the rounds on social media, and I see little clips of it, and he's like, this is how he talks to them. He's like, come on, guys, I'm a throwback. Like, remember, I fought everybody. And my promoters always got in the way, but I had to tell them that I wanted to fight everyone. And promoters are holding these fighters back. And come on. And so he made it pretty much saying, like, the thing that's stopping boxing from being great right now is that none of these fighters want to take risks. You got to take risks. That's
risks,
what he
said. Man.
Where are the fighters taking risks like I did? And then Floyd Schofield wants to take a risk. Wants to dare to be great, all the above, and fight Shakur. Probably going to lose, 100% going to lose. But it seems like Oscar is holding him back. Oscar is saying, no, I'm not putting my prospect. And shame on you, Shakur. Shame on you, Eddie Hearn, for wanting to put Shakur in with a prospect, even though I think Schofield is just a little bit above prospect. He's in that weird prospect contender gray area where he didn't look great in his last fight, but – you know, he has like 20 plus fights or whatever. And you would agree that, right? He's like kind of like in between.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's probably crossing that bridge to, you know, from prospect to actual contender. Cause he's got like 20 fights.
I want someone to check me on that, but he's there.
Yeah. He's got a lot of fights.
He did not look good in his last fight because he was brawling when he should have boxed. He was boxing when he should have been brawling. He's dropped. Like, yes, Shakur,
but
probably
that guy is super tough. He fought Tyrone, right?
Yeah,
that guy's super tough. We've had him on Pro Box cards. He's a badass.
Point being, like, Oscar, you talk so much, you're going to contradict yourself. All promoters contradict themselves. It's just part of being in front of the camera that much and having to spin all sorts of stuff for your job. And him saying, like, none of these fighters want to take risks. And the promoters are getting in the way. And then a week later,
he does it. He literally doesn't.
A week later, he's like, I'm not putting my prospect in there with Shakur, which, yeah, well, once again, business-wise, like, Boots not fighting Virgil Ortiz in off of a really tough fight for your first fight at 154 in 3 months. Schofield fighting Shakur would be awesome. We would love it as fans, mm-hmm, and we don't have any, you know, we don't have an investment.
I think it would be good for him too, though. Even though he loses, like, it's not, Shakur's not a guy who's, he's not gonna hurt you. He's gonna beat you, and you lose early in your career to a guy like Shakur, who, in hindsight, looking in the rearview, that's gonna be a especially if he does good, it's gonna be a loss that people are gonna overlook. Really,
I tend to agree with you, Chris, because not all losses are built the same.
Right. Right, you lose to Shakur Stevenson, you know, you win some rounds, you might come out of that with a loss, but looking good. People are going to see you.
Look at Daniel Dubois. Like,
yeah.
This guy got, I was looking at a video, like the anniversary, 3-4 years of him getting pummeled by Joe Joyce. And look at Joe Joyce now. He's basically out of boxing. Dubois is the freaking king, or one of the kings, at heavyweight. And not all losses are the same. Not every fight's the same. But it's the same type of theory, and it's the same type of sentiment you can take there. Is Schofield daring to be great, probably going to lose? What if he goes in and stings Shakur? What if he, mm-hmm, pushes Shakur back for the first time in his career? What if he has some great moments and you're not supposed to win? You walk away with a unanimous decision loss, but maybe you won 4 or 5 rounds, or you looked good in there, and fans are going to be like, oh, shoot, I want to see this guy again. And on top, yep, of it, you're making Saudi money. Like, that's why the dad is so involved. Like, you're making...
I think it's a win-win, honestly. Make the fight happen.
Okay. Well, apparently, as of this morning, this could change in the next 20 minutes, Shakur signed it, Schofield signed it. We'll see if Oscar signs off on it, because we know how Oscar operates, and it's the way he has to operate as a business owner. Like, he doesn't have that many assets at Golden Boy. You have to be very careful with Floyd Schofield, who has Shakur, Haney, and Tank Davis all tweeting about him, calling for him. Like, this guy, he might not have all the skills in the world, but he has something going for him where these guys are, like, tweeting about him, and, like, he's got some,
he's 22.
Some heat.
He's 22 and hasn't been in any big fights, and you got these guys talking about you.
It's something. Crazy.
The kid's got some juice, man. There's something there.
But, like, there is one way to look at, like, the other side of it is if he gets absolutely manhandled, which is not going to happen by Shakur, but it's just weird. Like, this is how you're going to cash out. I know this isn't the right way to look at it, and this is not how you or I are looking at this situation. But in past times, it's like, all right, you're cashing out your guy here in Floyd Schofield, which is an archaic way to look at boxing, and I hope this is not the case. But you're going to cash him out against Shakur, you cash him out against Tank, you cash him out against Haney, or those cash outs can never come. Do you take that first big offer that comes your way?
Yeah, it's playing the long game. And I understand that. And like you said, for Oscar, putting his business cap on, because Oscar wears a lot of caps. And it's funny, because he'll say something like he said in... he wears a lot of caps and speaks a lot of cap. But, he puts on that promoter cap, and he's got to be a promoter and a businessman. He's got to protect his asset. You know, but then he puts on his fighter cap when he's doing his clapbacks, and he's like, well, fighters got to fight each other. But yeah, that's just Oscar doing Oscar things, Oscar being a promoter. But yeah, did we get this fight? I don't think so, dude.
It's too risky for Schofield. It's not, I mean, the 5-on-5 is already set. They already, like, taken him out, unless they take Ortiz out of it. You know, it's Dubois, Parker, it's Better Bit of Bivol, it's Ortiz versus whomever, it's Shiraz Adamas, and Zhang Qayabil. So Shakur might have his own date. Like,
With Ennis falling out, that's a good card.
It's an awesome card. That's, like, what I was originally going to center this episode around, is breaking down these fights. But negotiations were too funny and too juicy to not talk about. But let's talk about some of these other fights that are on this card. So February 22nd, Dubois versus Parker. Better Be of Bivol 2 rematch, which is just the shocker that I heard in tech back in 2 weeks ago was going to happen on this card. Ortiz versus whoever they decide to fill in. Hamzat Shiraz versus Carlos Adamas, which is a unification at 160.
Good fight.
And Zhang versus Qayabil, which we thought it was going to be Zhang Bacoli. And in steps Qayabil, who is a wrecking ball in his own sense. And this is an awesome fight at heavyweight. Hopefully they put that fight first and just kick things off and just be absolute gangbusters. But yep. Damn, this is an unbelievable card. This might be the most balanced and, like, best card of the Riyadh era. Would you agree?
I agree. Definitely the best card they put together. It's got everything. It's got, listen, the main event, Bivol Beterbiev rematch.
Well, apparently that's not the main event.
No?
apparently Dubois Parker's the main event, which I don't know. Do you care? Does that matter to you?
No, I don't. But that's the most important fight on the card. Let's put it that way. The better be a Bivol. And it's a very tactical fight, right? So it's probably not going to be the most thrilling. The first fight was good for boxing heads like us who are on the edge of our seat watching a perfect tactical strategy back and forth of two guys playing master chess at the highest level. But it's not the most exciting fight. It's not the most fighting style. And you got to fight, like you just said, Zhang and Adjit. And like that's the opposite. It's a fight that doesn't matter all that much, like it's in terms of the hierarchy of what's out there. But the fight's going to be damn good. And it's two big guys, both aggressive. They're going to be banging. That's a great fight. It's just so much, like you said, balanced. It's such a balanced card. And even Parker and Dubois, that's an interesting style clash. I can see Parker winning that fight, dude. He has looked very scrappy lately. And his boxing ability is there. His endurance is there. His conditioning is there. He's physically strong. He takes a good shot, even though Zhang put him down twice, but he got up to win. Dubois can punch, but Parker knows how to fight punchers. That's an interesting fight. That's one that's going to be, I believe, also very tactical.
Yeah, and then you have this middleweight
Shiraz and Adames. That's an awesome fight. That's an awesome fight. That's a can't miss. And we're going to see what Shiraz is really made of in that fight.
Right, because I think Adames will push him into deep waters. He'll be undersized, but he'll be very tough. Shiraz is a freaking giant at 160. Not only that, just like get some like movement at 160. Like finally, we have two of these champions facing off at 160, and then we'll see what happens from there. Yeah, but I agree. Dubois Parker, awesome fight. Parker deserves it. Dubois deserves coming it. Off of that unbelievable performance against Joshua. Fury Usyk already being in the rearview mirror by the time this fight happens. We'll understand if Dubois wins, will he fight Fury? Will he fight Usyk? If Usyk wins, what happens with Dubois? Will he fight Joshua? Even though Joshua looks like he wants Fury. So that whole part of the puzzle will be interesting in that fight. Then you have Joseph Parker, who could just go in there and be like, oh, Dubois, you have plans on fighting Usyk? You have plans on fighting Fury? I'll just spoil him.
$100 million? I'll take this.
I've done that this year. I've done that for my last couple of fights, just spoiling plans of Turkey and by beating Wilder, by beating some big names in the heavyweight division. Beterbiev Bivol, like I can see that being just round 13 of their first fight. I think
it's gonna be the same fight.
Exactly. I see very small adjustments. Maybe Beterbiev is a little more aggressive because the knee feels better. He doesn't, it's not an extended time off. He's just right back in it. And maybe he's on that front foot even more. Bivol, maybe he stands and trades a little more. Maybe we get a little more pockets of entertaining moments in that fight. But ultimately, I think that is going to be another tactical fight. And I do think it's going to be exciting from the aspect of, like, fans were so, they just didn't know who won that first fight. They were so torn on that first one. And usually as boxing fans, you have to wait so long to get that next one. You have to wait a year or two to get a rematch of a controversial decision. So I feel like the first one is so fresh in boxing fans' minds, and they're so dug in on who they thought won. I think even if it's a quote-unquote technical boring fight, like we're going to have another debate at the end of it, whether it's Bivol or Beterbiev, unless there's a knockout to end it, which would probably come from Beterbiev's side, which would be stunning in its own right. Ortiz, we don't know Ortiz who he's fighting, but anytime Virgil steps in the ring, I'm all for that. And then that's it. That's the fight. We talked about Zhang. I will say this though, like I thought Zhang Boccoli was going to be the fight, but it seems like they got the organizations involved, and Boccoli's going to go a separate route. But I'm not mad at this by any means. Like this is the beauty. This is the beauty, Chris, of the heavyweight division and the resurgence of it, is that we are talking about two fighters that have multiple losses, two fighters that been on big cards, and now you just insert Kayabel, who fans now kind of know, boxing fans know that he's all action against Zhang, and it's a very fun fight, and the fans understand it. That's the beauty of what we've seen in Saudi Arabia with the heavyweights.
Yeah, getting movement going, because that, you know, there was 18 months there where there was no heavyweight fights going on. In comes Turkey and Riyadh and the Saudis, and the heavyweight division is alive and well. We're getting a lot of good fights. We've had a lot of good fights in the last 2 years. But this Zhang fight, I love it. I mean, Zhang, I think he deserves a title shot, man. This guy, he's been fighting killer after killer. They just keep putting killers in front of him. Adjit's another one. And, you know, he gets by all of them except for Parker and Ergovic, even though I thought he won that fight. But, yeah, I think he deserves a title shot. But this is a tough fight, man. It's a very, very tough guy in front of him. Adjit is really he's another guy who's really come out on these Saudi cards and looking like a monster. But
well, he is, and I think this will be an ultimate test for Caiobel. He's 25-0 with 17 knockouts. He's got the Sanchez win, which we've learned that Sanchez was basically operating with one leg. He was like, I need this payday. I'm going to hop in there one leg. And he looked awful, Frank Sanchez. Sanchez was a big favorite in that fight, and he looked...
Well, Sanchez is good normally.
Yes, he had one leg. He had one leg. And I'm not taking anything away from Caiobel. He did what he had to do in there. He beat a wounded soldier. But Sanchez was not the Frank Sanchez we've seen over the past couple of years. And then he beat the Makhmudov guy who looked like Frankenstein, who remember that guy? He couldn't move.
Yeah, no, he's not good. He just got beat by the Italian.
I have his name on here. Yeah, he got smoked by Guido.
Yeah, Guido. I love Guido. Great, great guy. But yeah, I was at that fight. I called that fight. He was getting killed.
Makhmudov. He couldn't move.
He couldn't get out of the way of a right hand. Yeah, every right hand that Guido threw.
Yeah, you could poke holes in a lot of people's resumes, but I think Caiobel has the goods. Like, we'll see. And we'll see, because this is an ultimate test against Zhang, who, for the most part, puts up good performances, but you can get stinkers out of Zhang, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
His last performance.
Just doesn't throw enough.
Right. You can have fights where he's just like, what the heck happened to you, man? Like, did you train at all? And then you have fights where he's like, looks like an absolute world stopper. So
Wilder fight. He looked incredible in the Wilder fight. In the Parker fight, you're like, dude, just step on the gas a little more.
Still managed to knock down Parker twice.
Twice, yeah.
That's just the beauty of heavyweight boxing. I really hope they put that fight first, because I believe that every fight card in America, big or small, should have heavyweights on it, and they should start off the show, because either the fight will suck and you get it out of the way, or it's unbelievable. And
really
you have just great vibes the rest of the night. Dude, I've called enough like small time shows, like these club shows, where I'm like, let me freaking produce this for you guys. Put these wild swinging heavyweights first.
Look at Dan putting on the promoter cap, talking about caps today. He's a promoter now.
I am.
It's another job for you to have in this crazy business that we're in.
I should ease into that role, get some new suits, talk suits. Big game.
Just hang around with a cigar. Have a cigar in your hand at all times. Never lit.
Start some wars with Eddie Hearn. I'll take on Eddie Hearn.
Yeah.
You know? End up in a clapback Thursday. That'd be an honor.
That would be an honor.
An honor and a privilege, because that means that I'm on your radar, Oscar, and you feel threatened by me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd ever want to be a promoter. Like, I have too much, what's the word? I have too much, I don't know.
Ethics, morals?
Yes, morals. Thanks. I don't even know the word.
Morals and ethics? I promoted one show once. And
how'd you like that?
Didn't like it.
I was there. I interviewed you.
Yep.
I think it was Broadway
Boxing.
That's
why I don't do it. You know what I would do? I would like to put on amateur shows. I think amateur shows are very cool. And you get to see the kids. It's the heart of the sport, you know? And these kids.
Interesting.
The camaraderie is really cool. Now that we're going through it with Michael, my nephew, like seeing how USA Boxing works, really, I really missed something that not fighting amateurs.
Do you think there's a void for that in New York?
I do, because New York is so expensive. It's very difficult to put on shows. Very, very difficult insurance-wise. Venues, parking, everything. Everything. Every reason I left New York is why there's a void in amateur.
But amateur is a little less expensive than pro.
Yes, definitely less expensive. You can actually make money doing amateur shows because you don't have to pay the fighters. But I think there's a void on the East Coast. The guys on the West Coast have so many fights. My nephew keeps fighting these kids from California. You have 200 fights. You know, to get 50 fights on the East Coast as an amateur is hard.
Well, it's like any sport. Like I grew up playing baseball, and I was like, I remember when we went down to Texas, and these kids play year round.
Yep.
And we play 30 games a year in the freezing cold, and these kids are playing 200 games, and we got absolutely smoked. Like, they were toying with us. So I can imagine what it's like for you know, out in California, where there's just way better gyms, way better sparring. California, Vegas,
way more kids fighting too.
Texas,
just way more kids fighting.
Yeah, well, what you do,
Mexican kids, those Mexican families.
What you do is like you have an amateur card, you have an amateur show, but you have maybe one or two pro fights on it.
Yeah, pro am.
Get the ticket seller at the end.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to do just a straight amateur card. We should do an inside boxing invitational.
Listen,
just
do Nick Canobio.
One or two fights a year. Just get these kids some fights.
Nick Canobio, who helps produce this show, had a great thing, Flex Fight Series, which was an amateur MMA, and it's still doing very well. And he has talked about wanting to get into the boxing game. So maybe we'll have to have a discussion off the air about how we can bring amateur boxing to the forefront. Because I would love to help young fighters start their careers. To me, that's a lot more rewarding.
So awesome.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why this whole conversation started. Because, you know, like you said, you have morals and ethics. So being a professional promoter is not there. But the USA boxing program, man,
these kids,
I love going to these fights. They're so much fun. The camaraderie is there. It's not like the pros where it's dog eat dog. Yeah, it's a fight. Yeah, it's a competition. But these guys hang out after fights. Like my nephew got sparring in Miami yesterday with two guys that he fought. One guy fought in the Nationals.
Yeah,
one guy fought in the Golden Gloves. Like they're sparring mates now. And like they're buddies. They text each other and like, oh, we'll come down to the gym. We'll spar. All right, cool. And again, they fought each other. It's great.
If I was to do that, I feel like I'm helping in a way. Like
yes.
Building, it's more pure, building some young careers, helping these kids get out of the streets.
Out of the streets.
I don't know, even if you're growing up in Long Island, you're not really in the streets, but helping young boxers start their careers.
We have streets in Long Island.
Freeport?
they're just not very scary.
Windanch?
Windanch.
Some of those other ones? Central Islip. Wow, yeah, I went to college in Brentwood. It was pretty rough. For 2 years.
I hung out in Central Islip quite a bit.
Central Islip was, I was always told to not really stay. Drive through Central Islip, Dan.
That's where I spent my high school years hanging out.
CI.
And CI, baby.
Wow. There's a large portion of this listeners have no idea what we're talking about. Long Island lore.
Yeah, very Long Island specific episode, guys. Sorry.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next at the end of this week. We have a massive weekend of fights. I'm very excited. Coming off of 2 weeks of nothing, I am literally like, bring me a big fight. And we have the top-ranked doubleheader with Valdez and Navarrete.
Awesome
Bessie
fight.
Ramirez
awesome
and
card in Arizona. Espinosa. I wanted to go. Unfortunately, I can't.
Liam Paro fighting Richardson Hitchens for a piece of the 140 title. So I'm looking forward to our episode later this week where we can talk about these fights, break them down. And just watch
and
some
pro
big
box.
Fights.
We have a card in Waterford, Ireland.
Are you going there
with the Conlon brothers? No, we're going to be doing it remotely.
Okay, good. I was wondering, like, not good, but like, I'm sure you can use a break in the travel. But I was like, what's going on with you going? Are you going there again?
Yeah, no. So, but it's a fun little card. You know, it's
those guys fight hard, man. Those Irish dudes.
Yeah.
Pro box.
Yeah, they're doing all Irish. They're doing all Irish. Dust up, as they called it. Irish domestic dust up.
Love that. All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you later on in the week to break down some big fights. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.
Tires matter. They're the only part of your vehicle that touches the road. Tread confidently with new tires from Tire Rack. Whether you're looking for expert recommendations or know exactly what you want, Tire Rack makes it easy. Fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, and convenient installation options. Go to TireRack.com to see tire test results, tire ratings, and consumer reviews, and be sure to check out all the special offers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.